cliffcentral.com. Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, transforming towards an empowered society. It's absolutely wonderful to be with you. I'm Adrian Groenewald, as always, and we've got a wonderful guest in the studio. I'm excited. I think it's going to be my highlight of the year. But before we go there, visit leadershipplatform.com, leadershipplatform.com, two P's in the middle, one word. Of course, this is our Leadership Masterclass, and it's going to be 1 hour show. It's not going to be a master lesson necessarily with a leader interview. We're bringing it all together. We asked Joey Evans, who just completed the Dakar 2017, to share leadership and life lessons from this incredible experience. So he's with us in the studio. He just returned, and his body is still hurting, but he's here. I'm really happy about that. We asked his wife, Meredith, to join us as well, for obvious reasons, I think. I think this is as much of a victory and achievement for her as it is for Joey. So we've got both of them sitting here with us, and we're not in the studio, we're at their home, but this will go out live in the coming Monday. So guys, welcome, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, good to be here.
Thank you.
Meredith, do you often sit in these interviews as well, on and off? Now more than in the past, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Now more than in the past. I just did my first TV interview this morning, so.
Yes.
All a bit nerve-wracking.
Yes.
You guys did a carte blanche thing this morning.
Yes.
Okay, now that's this is a little bit different, but it's great to be with you. Joey, you're back.
Yeah, good to be back.
Living one's dream is not always easy, and even while living it, you want to be home, right?
Absolutely. Now, there's a lot of times out there I would have been quite happy with a nice warm bed.
Okay. Joey, I think a lot of people know your story, okay, where you come from, the last 10 years, if I can call it that. So we don't have to go into that too much detail, but I do want you to remind us where you come from. You know, what makes your story so special? Lots of things, but the obvious one,
okay,
from paraplegic to Dakar.
Sure.
So just quickly a run-up on that, a minute or two, and then we'll go through all the learnings from this whole experience as well as the Dakar in a little bit more detail. Go for it. Give us that recap of your story.
Yeah, sure. You know, I've always loved riding bikes. You know, started off as BMXs and mountain bikes and moved on to motocross bikes and dirt bikes. And it's been a passion of mine. And, you know, I always had a dream to race in the Dakar Rally. I loved racing. You know, I used to race off-roads and hair scrambles and that kind of stuff. And I was doing pretty well in the regional championship, you know, lying second and coming into the second last race of the year in 2007. And then at the Heidelberg race, I broke my back and I broke my T8, T9 vertebra, and I had a spinal cord injury. And so I started off after the, you know, I realized as I woke up, as I was unconscious, that I was completely paralyzed from the chest down. I had no movement or feeling, you know, below my chest. And the future looked pretty bleak. You know, it was a case that I was diagnosed as originally as being a complete injury. And the outcome was that, or the prognosis was that I wouldn't walk again. I was pretty fortunate. You know, I had an operation where they fused my back and took some pressure off the spinal cord. And I was obviously then diagnosed as an incomplete spinal cord injury. And I started to get some things back. You know, I started to get a little bit of movement in my toe and in my ankle and then slowly in my legs. And over the weeks and months, I learned to walk again, pretty badly, but to walk again, and eventually without crutches and braces and that kind of stuff. And then I went on to riding my bike again, which was something that was really a dream to be able to ride again. And after that, learned to ride again and started continuing to chase my dream of doing the Dakar Rally, which was something that I had prior to the injury. And so I started working on that again, and that's how it went.
And then you had another accident which put you in hospital. How long? But now, Meredith, I think it's an interview on its own to ask you what you went through when that specific incident happened. But give us just a brief feel, if you can, tap back into that. What was it like when this prognosis came that your husband may never walk again? I've never engaged you about that. What was it like?
It was devastating. I was at the race with Joe when it happened, and it was like all hell broke loose, and it was from one hospital to the next hospital to where he ended up, all in the space of two or three days, I think.
Yeah.
And it was a reality check when he was put into the Mule Med hospital, the rehab hospital, because everybody's there in a wheelchair, and I don't think it had seemed real up until that point. And it was, you got, my daughter, it was her birthday the next day after he had the accident. And so my eldest was 8 and my youngest was 3. And just thinking how life's going to be different now from, you know, from how it was devastating.
I really believe that this could be a conversation just about the emotions then, and there were times that Joey felt, okay, I'm going to work at this, and trying to psych himself up, and you doing the same, but no, I'm sure doubts in your mind, will he ever walk again, up and down? I mean, that's a whole emotional roller coaster. So that's another conversation, although I think interesting how you got through that. And fast forward, you had this dream, I'm going to call it a vision, to do the Dakar, and you've now done it. And we are going to, in the rest of the show, unpack it, Joey, but just give us a feel for what the Dakar is like, okay? We will look at the detail, but just is it what you thought? Is it about 3 times worse? Is it tougher than we can ever imagine? Is it easier than we can imagine? You know, what's it really like?
It was incredibly tough, and it's definitely physically the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And it's designed to just break you. The design is to give you as little sleep. And it's as dangerous as you can think. You know, you see on TV our guys die there, and you think like, yeah, but I'm different. I ride safer. I'm, you know, I got a cool head on me. I'm not one of these guys that just gets crazy at racing. You know what I mean? I'm a thinker. You know, I'll be fine and stuff. And it's just that dangerous. No matter who you are, you know, when you're out there in that environment, it's just the most insane, crazy thing I've done.
So while you do it, sorry to interrupt, but you actually have moments where you can sense, I don't want to say you stare death in the face, but you feel that danger at times.
You stare death in the face. It really is like that. You know, there's times when trucks pass you. You know, there was a time when I was on a single lane road and a truck came up behind me, and the truck's got to get through, and these guys are racing hard, and you got to get out the way, and you can't get off the road because there's big boulders either side of the road as far as you can see. So I just leaned my bike against the side of the boulder, you know, stopped the bike as quick as I could, leaned it against the side of the boulder, and you just held your breath and you just think like, I don't know if this truck's going to fit past me. And the guy comes past you at, you know, over 120 kilometers an hour, and you'll stand still and he misses you by millimeters. And it really was one of those where, is this it? You know, it really is like that.
And you had a car drive over your motorbike. You literally had several incidents. We can't over dramatize it, could we? If we made a movie and we dramatized it, it probably would be accurate.
It is, and even explaining to people, you know, you can't really explain what it's like until you're there. You know, when you're surrounded by guys that are just fueled by winning and fueled by time and trying to get through stuff and taking chances and that kind of stuff, it really is a case of it's a crazy environment. It makes no sense in a real world, you know.
Yeah, well said. All right. I mean, we'll get a little bit more into the physicality of it. And of course, you went there not even with your full physical capacity, your legs and full feel back. And so you're definitely not in peak condition like the other riders. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. You know, I've got a lot of things that, you know, I my legs don't work properly still. You know, I can walk, but I can't run. I can do a bit of a dodgy kind of jog. I don't have a lot of feeling in my legs. I can feel touch, but I can't feel hot, cold, or pain sensation on the skin. And I have other challenges. You know, I still have to use catheters, and I still have to take medication to help me digest food. There's a lot of extra stuff that I'm dealing with over and above, you know, being at a rally.
Meredith, how much did you try and understand this severity of this race? Did you read up on it? Did you just leave it alone and just trust your husband will get it right? Did you ever expect it would be the stuff that which you know now anyway? What's your comment about this race, watching it from the sideline very closely though?
I think we spent so much time beforehand fundraising for it that by the time he left, I'd forgotten to ask him a lot of questions about the race. And I was fortunate to have a phone call from one of the guys that had done it the year before, Ted, who explained a lot of the stuff to me so that when I'm looking up on the app, I can understand what it is that I need to be following. But we knew it was going to be dangerous. We've watched Dakars in the past, you know, for I don't know how many years. And from that point of view, I mean, he's had to look up statistics for articles he's had to write before, so we knew that there was deaths, and it's a dangerous race, and we knew it was going to be dangerous, but...
That's true. I didn't consider, obviously, for years it was your dream. You've been watching it every year, so you obviously had a feel. No one can know what it's like until they've done it. We understand that, but okay, that makes a lot of sense. I was just fascinated when they on TV show these wonderful scenes, this incredible, breathtaking scenery. Do you ever have an opportunity to appreciate that, to actually look at it, to enjoy it, or actually not at all?
You try to make an effort to, you realize that you're there, and you realize that you're there racing, and all you really want to do is finish the race. Obviously you're focused on racing, you're focused on making the times, getting through the specials, but at the same time, you are just surrounded by these beautiful places. And so often when I was riding, I kept thinking to myself, look around, enjoy where you are, and you do. You'd love to be a bit more tourist and have a bit more of a tour there, but you're not, you're racing. So you do appreciate it, but not as much as you would as if you were, touring and had more time, because time is really is the one thing you don't have for 2 weeks.
Mm. Joey, I'm going to extract a few lessons, okay, because we're in the leadership space and it's about life and leadership. I think leadership is life, life is leadership. So I certainly have quite a few lessons here that I want to discuss with you and explore. But from your side, I also want you to share with us some real lessons you've learned from this whole experience. And I'm sure you've thought it through now. You went there very open-minded, probably having an idea that you want to capture this and share it after. There's a lot of footage, so I'm expecting that you have in your mind a lot of lessons. The one that stood out for me, also because we visited a day or so ago, we interviewed the CEO of Harmony Gold, which has about 28,000, 30,000 employees, a very experienced leader. I asked him to share his views on authentic leadership, and the first thing he said was, authentic leaders create a vision. And this is what you seem to... what's the right word? You seem to absolutely epitomize that. You had a vision. You called it a dream all the time. You had a vision of doing the Dakar, and you went for it. But that's the first lesson I learned from you. It's like nothing could stop you from doing it. And we'll look at all the obstacles you had along the way. But your comment on that?
Yeah, I think... For me, I pictured myself, standing on that finisher's podium, and that's something that just drove me, it was that picture of that happening, and whatever it takes to make that happen, and so definitely, for me, I needed to see that, because when you're down there and you're in the dirt and you can't see anything and you're tired and you're just finished physically, you're finished, emotionally you're finished, you just got nothing left. You got to pitch that vision and realize that whatever you're in right now is going to pass. You're going to get over this. You got to get to that place. You've seen it. You're going to be there. You just got to do the steps to get there.
And unimaginable, what I picked up from you is that you had that vision before being a paraplegic.
Correct, yeah.
So that incident was merely a huge obstacle to overcome. Then the other accident and then the fundraising and who knows how many other millions of things in between. But the next lesson for me is you had the vision, but then you actually went for it. A lot of us have visions. A lot of us want to get wealthy, or you want to get a degree, or you want to start your own business. But some people go for it, and then some people don't even. They just want it. So the next lesson for me was you actually went for it. Another guy we interviewed last week was Marnus Broederijk. He started the Bean Counter, also one of the Shark Tank sharks in the show that was on TV. And he said, whatever it takes. It's one of his mottos. So you have a vision or you want to achieve something, then it is whatever it takes. So that's something else I pick up from you, is that you went for it. And whatever it took, a lot of people don't do that, right?
For sure. And it was a lot of sacrifices. It was a lot of things along the way that we had to do. And what I really did was each year we'd tick some boxes. I looked at the year and I thought, well, at the end of the year I need to be one step closer. What am I going to do this year? And sometimes it was I needed to do this race, or I needed to do that race, or I needed to raise this, or I needed to go here. And each year, and suddenly I found myself 2 years out from Dakar, saying, I could do this now. You know, this is actually within reach. Because although I wanted it and although I was working towards it, you know, you got to remember that when you're paralyzed and you all these kind of dreams and stuff evaporated, you're scared to dream stuff because you don't know what's even capable. You know, you don't know what the future is going to hold. But as we, when we got to that point, it was probably about, you know, maybe 18 months before Dakar or something like that, I sat down with Meredith and I said, all right, I got to commit a bit here. You know, we got to, you know, I really want to do this, but the only way I can do it is if you're on board, you know, if we can really do this, you know. And then, yeah, there were some tears, you know, and she cried a little as well. No, I'm just kidding. and so it was a tough thing. It was a really tough thing, but we looked at it and she thought about it a lot and she said, okay, cool, I'm on board, let's do this. And then we organized to go and race in the Mazuga Rally in Morocco, because we have to, you know, for Dakar, you have to qualify. You can't just put in an entry. You have to send in a CV and you have to have done an international rally. And so I went and did the 6-day Mazuga Rally in Morocco. And then I finished that. And so then it was entry in for Dakar. And then it was all go. But it was hard because you look at the money it cost to go to Morocco, which we didn't raise money for. That came out of our own money. We could have done fantastic things as a family for the amount of money that cost. And you're kind of sacrificing it for my dream in a way. So there was a lot of family sacrifices and things along the way in order to get here.
For me, another lesson is you faced insurmountable opposition head on en route to this vision. That's another lesson, is that you will always face that. And just now I want to hear from Meredith one or two things. As you say, without her, it couldn't have happened. But raising funds in itself was a huge mountain to climb, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. That was a tough one.
So when you realized we got to do this, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Is that when it dawns on you, we now have to actually raise $1 million?
Yeah. It was exactly that. And it was, I didn't want to approach people before I'd done Morocco either, because there's lots of guys that have got dreams. There's lots of guys that want to do great things and, you know, go to big races and all this sort of stuff. But it doesn't help if someone goes up to someone and says, hey, this is what I want to do. Will you pay for it? You know, you kind of got to prove to them that, hey, I can do this. And this is what I've done so far. I'm worthy to do this, you know? And so, when I got back from Morocco in the May, we only had about 7 months until Dakar, and we needed to raise 1.1 million, and that excluded the bike. And so, you know, the bike I kind of financed myself, but I needed the 1.1 just for the 2 weeks to be there, you know, for support and entry fee and all the other things. And so we had 7 months in which to do it. And I think in our hearts, we never believed we'd actually get the full amount, you know, but we thought we got 7 months and we're all in, you know, exactly like you said now, whatever it takes. And it was hard, you know, you got to kind of take that pride and you bury it and you go and knock on doors and you speak to guys. And we did a whole bunch of different things where we put the names on the bike of everybody who donated as individuals. You know, we had several companies come on board and things, but it was tough. You know, we had a lot more no's than we had yeses, you know, and you just got to keep going at it because it was hard. It really was hard. It was like, you know, cold calling or hard sales, you know, it's that hard work, you know. But every day I'd just be like, we said whatever it takes, you know, and that's what we're going to do. And so that's exactly what we did. And, you know, I think I got the final amount 2 days before I left, that we finally got the, you know, everything we needed. And then it was a go, which was a real fairy tale in itself, being able to raise the money, you know, because that was just, it was just another fantastic, you know, kind of brick in the wall of this awesome fairy tale in a way.
Meredith, just your take on that. I mean, this impossible goal already, that's over and above the crazy goal of finishing Dakar with Joey's background. Now you have to do this ridiculous, climb this ridiculous mountain called raise finances. Up and down, did you doubt sometimes? I mean, another roller coaster, isn't it?
Yeah, it is for sure. And it seemed every time that I was like pit of despair, somebody else came on board. And so you're like high of highs again. But it wasn't just raising the money, it was the time it took raising the money. It's time away from which Joey needed to be training. You know, it was a hard thing. in that, you know, you're trying to organize all these events, but he should have been out training, you know, and getting more fitter. And to find the balance between both of those, it became quite trying at times.
You needed them both. You need the money to, you need the money to be there. But once we get there, it's me for 2 weeks in the desert and in the mountains and stuff, and I've got to deliver the goods. And so on the one end, all I want to do is just train, you know, just train and ride the bike and work out and get to where I want to be as much as I can so I can actually finish this thing. It didn't help if I had the money and couldn't finish. But at the same time, it didn't help if I was all super fit but couldn't go there. So it was a constant balance where you feel like, okay, this week we did well. We organized an event and we had a good turnout at the event and we raised some money and stuff. But I haven't ridden the bike this week. And it was stressful. And then another week I'd do a week with a buddy in Swaziland and we'd ride every day and stuff. And we'd come back and it was like, wow, that was some great training. It was really good. We didn't raise a cent this week, you know. And then the next week we're getting shirts made and caps made that we sold. And we did just about anything we could think of. You know, I was, you know, I had a kidney on sale. And but it was like whatever it took to get there is what we did. And somehow we managed to get just enough of both to be able to be there.
It's just you have stories within stories here.
Oh yeah, there's lots.
Literally,
yeah.
You've got story. It's a movie. Just the fundraising.
Yeah,
it's a movie. The accident you had and the recovery. Dakar is a movie on its own. Now it's the next movie. It's the next part of your life, and we'll talk about that in a moment. So again, we can talk about the opposition you had all the way through from the dream years ago to do Dakar. But I'm Meredith, you could have said no, reasonably so. As the wife here and the hero in the background, we've got a hero in the forefront and a hero in the background. You reasonably could have said, honestly, Joey, I understand your dream, but we can build another house with this. We can I don't know, go on dream holidays. We can, the kids' education, there's just so much. And
slow down, slow down.
We're in a difficult economy. Yeah. Things are not easy. You run your own business, Joey. So Meredith, so on financial, emotional, physical reasons, you could have said, I think you're crazy. Don't do this. I love you. It's wonderful, but no. But you didn't. Why not?
I guess for me, it had been a few years that he'd asked. That he'd not asked.
He wore her down.
That he broached the subject of. And it was too soon. I knew that I wouldn't be able to handle it. I knew that the children were too young to handle it. But the last time that, it was actually a year ago. It wasn't a year and a half ago. It was Christmas the year before that you left. And I remember we were swimming and you brought it up. Because all the kids are away, and just the way he pitched it. No, but everything he said, I just felt a calmness about it. That okay, yeah, this is it. This is the right time. And I knew that loads of people were going to think I was mad, but it just felt right. And
so you did play the role of the rational, sane wife. For some time, balancing the process that we kind of eventually did it at a more realistic time, if there ever was one, by the way.
Yeah.
But so that's realistic. That in itself, sorry, again, is another story of that process where you kept hounding your wife in a nice way.
We've kind of found, you know, throughout our marriage, it's a bit of a balance. You know, we are completely different people, and we see things different and everything. But it's a case of I want her to be happy, you know, and she wants me to be happy. And so every time these kind of things come up, whether it's for racing or for whatever, we try to find this balance of what works for both of us, you know. And so with the Dakar thing, she realized how important it was to me, and it didn't make sense to her, and it probably still doesn't, but she understands me, and she understands, you know, the importance it is to me. And so I think it was one of those where she said, look, I realize how important this is for you, and I want you to chase this dream, and so I'll back you on it.
And that brings me to the next lesson, is they say leaders inspire a shared vision. So you have a vision, Joey, but you had to get your wife, your family, your friends, colleagues, a lot of others to buy into this vision, to somehow make
huge.
It happen.
That was a big part that, you know. And there's some people, you know, like some of my close riding buddies and stuff, they were on board right away. You know, they were like, yeah, man, this is awesome. Let's do this. And then there's others that still don't get it now. You know, even though I'm back and it's done, they still think it was crazy and not worth it and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, for what we try to do, you know, from the start, and we still try now, is to make it something that we've done together, you know. So with the fundraising, Meredith was hugely involved. You know, she was doing more at that than I was. You know, she helped me with all putting all the names on the bikes of the guys that donated, and you know, with logos and all sorts of stuff, and you know, getting out there, and you know, and so we did tons of it together, and it became something that we did together. It was exciting and stressful, and you know, everything at the same time rolled into one. And so that was a whole adventure on its own that we did together. That was fantastic. We had the girls, you know, helping us as well. And we did these fundraisers. They would help, you know, sell t-shirts and caps, and they would, you know, help with it. We did little fundraiser type raffle things and all sorts of stuff, which they helped sell tickets for, you know, at these events we did. And they would help us with packing out stuff and packing away stuff and all these things. And they were just fantastic. And we're all wearing the same t-shirts, these old Parrot Adako shirts, and doing it all together. And so a lot of it was together as a couple and as a family, and they were all invested, and you know, I knew they were like cheering me on every day, watching on TV and that sort of stuff. And it's definitely been a lot of fun and a lot of stress all together, you know, as a family.
Talking to Joey Evans, he completed the Dakar 2017, if you're just joining us, and we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to return with Joey and Meredith, his wife, and that's why we're putting them together. As he just said, it is a together, you try to do it together. And that unity probably also is a winning formula for anything in life. So we're going to take a quick break. Then we'll come back. We'll continue some lessons learned. And we'll ask him to also share from his perspective what some of those lessons were. Very exciting interview. He's still hurting. His muscles are still hurting. He landed on Tuesday. Finished on, when was it?
Saturday.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
So it's fresh, fresh, fresh. And what a wonderful conversation. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.